As most of you know by now, one of the favorite things that I like to do as a priest is to teach and to preach. I'm well known for that because my homilies are very short and pithy. That was satire for those who don't know me. But every once in a while, a Sunday like this comes along, which provides a tremendously, I would say, difficult challenge. And the difficult challenge consists in this. Today is one of the most formative feasts of the church, which is the observance of the Transfiguration of Jesus, beautifully done up there in the artwork. But it also happens to fall on the mid-year of DSF Sunday. Now, we have two DSF Sundays a year in which we talk about the DSF fund. And I can already feel some of the congregation going, money again. Well, that's correct. But I've been thinking a lot about this. And I would like to join those two things together. Not by duct tape, okay, but by really following the logic of the Transfiguration and how that affects the way we participate as Christians, because they are not connected unnaturally. They are actually very connected. It's very much like saying that your toe is very much connected to your head. They may be on opposite ends of your body, but I dare you to stub your toe and just sit around and think, my toe hurts, but the rest of me is fine. I dare you to do that. So, this is the way that I'd like to approach it. And I'd like to approach it first by telling you a story that I learned. It's an actual story. I don't remember the exact missionary. It's a story about a missionary that was... And I learned this story from Father Scott, who celebrates Mass here every Sunday. But the story is of a missionary in about the 6th century. Around the 6th century, the Christian faith was spreading northwards from Rome and from Jerusalem. And missionaries were starting to encounter Germanic tribes. The Romans used to call them the barbarians. And as they would encounter, there were many martyrs. But there were missionaries who finally were accepted by the Germanic tribes. And many in the Germanic tribes were baptized. The story is of one missionary who was working with a particular tribe, and they were celebrating baptisms. And they were baptizing whole families. But one of the missionaries noticed, especially for the men, that when they would be baptized, and they would do it like we do for adults in full immersion, that the men would allow themselves to be fully immersed, but they would hold up their right hand and would allow themselves only to be immersed with their right hand out of the water. And the missionary who was finding this, well, at first he thought it was just a little quirk. But as he walked on, he saw that every man was doing that, holding up his right hand so that it wouldn't get under the water. And finally, he found out what was happening. That these people were accepting Jesus and were having the rest of their body baptized, but they wanted to be able to do whatever they needed to do with their right hand. And so they were making sure that their whole body was baptized, but not their right hand. Because if they had to kill someone, they wanted their right hand unbaptized. Now, that story, which is supposed to be a true story, has always spoken quite a bit to me, especially when I have to talk about money. Because I always imagine us, most of us, to be baptized, but if we could, we would do the same thing as those pagans, only we would hold our wallets outside. And you say to yourself, it's like we're willing to say, yes, Lord, everything except my wallet. Okay. Now that's, of course, is a humorous insight, but it's not far from the truth. You see, part of the whole notion of being a Christian, and please remember, and you've probably heard me talk about this because I've been on this kick for quite a while. The difference between being a cultural Catholic and an intentional disciple. To me, that's a very big difference. Very big difference. And please understand, all of us, at one time or another, have been or are cultural Catholics. Now, what is a cultural Catholic? When you were, as somebody says, what religion are you? You say Catholic. But there's really not a lot of effort. You gotta kind of go to Mass. You know, you make sure you don't commit any big sins. But you don't go out of your way. But you're Catholic, you know. When it comes down to Fridays in Lent, you don't eat meat. You go to confession every once in a while. But that's as far as it goes. I grew up that way. I was for a long time a cultural Catholic. When it came time to go to Mass, I rolled my eyes. I didn't want to go to Mass when I was a teenager. Now, an intentional disciple is when you slowly, and I mean slowly, make the transition to understanding that being a disciple of Jesus, which is the word, please always remember, and I like to say this every once in a while, being a Catholic, periodically, there will be people, especially here in the South, who will ask you if you are either Catholic or are you a Christian. Okay, are you Catholic or Christian? Please remember that the word Catholic is an adjective. The word Christian is the noun. Okay? If somebody says, are you a Catholic or a Christian? You say, I am a Catholic Christian. It's kind of like asking me, are you a bald or are you a man? I am a bald man. Okay? I am not, I don't make the choice between baldness and man. That is an adjective. Okay? Catholic is the same way. It means concerning the fullness of the faith. But anyway, so as you make the transition from being a cultural Catholic to an intentional Catholic or intentional disciple, you begin to ask yourself, what's this all about? Why am I taking my entire life and I am looking to pattern my entire life after this person called Jesus? Because that's what an intentional disciple does. Remember, a disciple, as I bang constantly, a disciple is a student. If you are a student, who is the professor? The professor is Jesus. Why do we pick Jesus as the professor? Because in our understanding, Jesus is God become human. And therefore, he became human so that we could see what a normal human being is supposed to look like. Okay? Before Jesus, the human race was so alienated from itself, we didn't know who we were and where we were going and what the whole life is all about, that we were all running like chickens with no place to go. Jesus is when the point in history when God, effectively God says, you all have screwed it up so badly that I need to become one of you so that I can show you what I had intended you to be like when I created you. Jesus is God showing us how to be human. And therefore, we study Jesus, we hear his disciples, because we know we don't know how to be really human, and we try to pattern our life on him. So notice this. This is not about holding your wallet out here or holding your sexuality over here or holding, you know, any part of yourself around, away. This is when you, an intentional disciple, is when you have come to the point of saying, my whole life, I have to imitate the teacher. He is the teacher. And then you go about your whole life trying to figure out how to conform the whole of you into how you ought to imitate the Lord Jesus. This is an aside. There's a little meme, pictures that has a subtitle in it. And it has a priest with a pipe, and it says, the next time somebody says to you, what would Jesus do? Remind them that freaking out and turning over tables is always an option. I love that. So let me get back to the norm. So the whole issue then has to be that we are disciples of Jesus, the whole of us. Why are we his disciples? Notice what's happening today in the Transfiguration. The Transfiguration is Jesus' way of telling us what our future looks like. That's why he's transfigured. Think about the word transfigure. Trans means to change. Okay? The figure, the human figure, to be transfigured is actually telling you, look at your future. Because if you are his disciple, what we are moving towards is that in the resurrection, when we die, and last I've heard, the death rate among humanity is holding steady at 100%. Okay? When this happens to you, which will happen, and it could happen when you're young or old, that is your future. So the issue then is, a disciple is the kind of person that goes through life basically saying, how can I prepare for what is about to happen? How can Jesus teach me to live a life that will be preparing for that event? Because what's going to happen, and it is going to happen, is that the day you die, I have this image of what's going to happen. And I probably have shared it with you before, but to me, the whole idea of what's going to happen is that you are going to, when you die, I think you're going to stand before a mirror. And the mirror will not be a mirror that will show your body. The mirror will show the soul, the character that you have constructed by the decisions that you have made in this life. Some people will, that were beautiful on earth, may look like monsters when they see themselves in the mirror that does not reflect the outer, but the inner character of the human. What the job of every Christian, every intentional disciple, is to make choices throughout your entire life that will create the character of the person you want to see in the mirror of your soul. That is the whole point. You see, it's interesting because the word character in Latin, excuse me, in Greek, comes from the word karezen. And karezen means to carve. Every time you make decisions about your life, you are literally carving your character. You are becoming who you are, one notch at a time. Sometimes I have imaginations of a spreadsheet, you know, and every day there's a number going down, down, down. But at one time, somebody's going to draw a line, and the question will be asked, so what does this add up to? And that's a question that's going to be asked of you and me. What does your life add up to? And so the whole issue then becomes, what part of our lives are we withholding? What part of our lives is really going to become a runt? And a lot of us, the issue has to do with either our sexuality or our money or our, you know, pride, different things for different people. So how does this fit within DSF? It fits because if you look at the New Testament, Jesus made no separation between money and life. If you study the New Testament, what you will find is that almost 7 out of every 10 parables that Jesus told have to do with some kind of business arrangement. Either he entrusts some money to some people, either he sees a lady giving a gift to the temple, and he says she's given more than all of the other who put a lot of money in there, or he entrusts money to somebody. Constantly, he is using it. And why? Because think about what money is. Whenever you go to work, you are basically putting in your effort, and you get a piece of paper that says your effort is worth this much, and money is stuff that you can do stuff with. It's a little certificate, you know, a dollar bill or a $20 or a $100 bill. It's a certificate that has a certain amount of power, and you could do things with it. And how did you get that little certificate? You worked for it. When you take money and you say, I am giving X amount of money, and I'm giving it to XYZ cause, what you're saying is, this part of my work, this part of my effort, is as if I had done it for XYZ cause. Because I want my effort to go to that. Every Christian has a responsibility, all of us, not just priests and nuns, have a responsibility to make sure that the gospel is spread and that people are ministered to. Not all of us can do it all at once. We can't do everything. And so that's why we as a congregation, all of us, all Christians throughout the world, are asked to use what we earn to extend our efforts and apply our efforts to things that we can't do ourselves. That's why what happens when you give. Hopefully, unless whatever church or charity you're giving to is wasting your money. And you should always keep an eye on how the money that you worked for hard is being spent. By the way, if you ever want to check on any charity, there's a website you should go to. It's called Charity Navigator. And if you go to Charity Navigator, look up your charity. And all this website does, they investigate every single charity that they can get a hold of, and they rate the charity as to how it's using your money. Okay? So, and I'm very happy to say, whenever you look at any Catholic charities, you see a very high score. So how does this relate to DSF? Folks, it relates totally. Why? Because we call ourselves Catholics. And the word Catholic means concerning everybody. We can't say, being Catholic, we can't say, well, we're just going to take care of our parishioners. You're not signed up here in this parish, well, we're not going to minister to you. That really bugs me. Bugs me when I get people that come and talk to me, Father, I went to XYZ parish, and they don't want to baptize my child, or they don't want to do our wedding because we're not registered there. I've never wanted to kill priests so much. I don't do it because it's a sin. But that priest should know better. He should know better because why? Because you don't belong primarily to St. Cyril's. You belong to the one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. You can go to any church in this world and you are part of the family. I still remember a few months ago, it was a Seventh-day Adventist. It was a guy at the radio. I do radio on Sunday nights. And it's between me, a Jewish rabbi, and a Protestant minister. And we had a guest who was a Seventh-day Adventist. And he at the end of the show, we were walking out, and he said he was talking about some Catholic that had gone over and become Seventh-day Adventist. And then he asked me this question. He said, what does a person have to do to resign from the Catholic Church, to be disowned by the Catholic Church? And I looked at him and I said, I will answer it, but let me ask you a question. Do you have children? Yes, he said. What would one of your children have to do to nullify the fact that you're his father? Well, nothing. You can do whatever you want, but you're always going to be my son or my daughter. And I said, bingo, to use a Catholic term. Bingo. Get it? See, it's a joke. Okay. So I said, bingo. There's no way you can un-Catholic yourself. You can throw yourself down. You can throw a temper tantrum. You can say you hate God. You can burn your baptism certificate. You can decapitate any saint you want. You're still Catholic. That's it. You cannot un-Catholic yourself. It's kind of like being mad at your parents. You can't make them your mom and dad. They are. And so for us as Catholics, we can't look at any human being in this world and say, we don't have to care about you. because you're not part of our church. It's not Catholic. And so in our archdiocese, that's what all the parishes do together. All of us together make sure that there's not a single person that needs ministry that we don't take care of in some way or another. Now, can I or you guys here, for example, at St. Cyril's, can we go down to the medical center and take care of every Catholic that's there when they need ministry? There's no way that I could do it. And so the archbishops of this diocese have said, look, no one church can handle this big thing, like the medical center or the prisons, being prisons chaplains. So what we're going to do is we're going to establish a ministry that is not a single parish, that all the parishes together make sure that the gospel and ministry is given to people that no one parish can reach. And that is what the DSF does. The chaplains, there is over 30 or 40 chaplains that the diocese hires, and all they do is they visit the thousands of people at the medical center. Do you know that in Houston, there are thousands of sailors that come into the ship channel from all over the world? Before the Catholic Church built a center to minister to those mariners, guess who was there when the mariners came in from weeks at sea? Prostitutes and drug dealers. That's who was there. And what did we do? The Catholic Church says no. And so we built a mariner center. Now that's ecumenical. And when the sailors come into the port of Houston, guess who's there now? Chaplains. And there is a center where they can call home, where they can get something to eat. They can, all kinds of ministry is done for them. Sometimes, some of them are in crisis, and so we minister them. Prisons. You know how many hundreds and thousands of people are in prison? What do we do? Do we say, hey, you got yourself in there? Sorry. We can't. Why? Because we're Catholic. We can't do that. That's what DSF does. That's when we look at our brothers and sisters and say, look, we can't do it ourselves, but here's the effort that I have earned with my money. I've earned my money with my effort at work, and I want to put it to make sure that we take care of you. That's DSF. And that happens also in here in this parish. And why? Because that's our future. And what you do now carves the character. If all you say is, my money is mine, you're not doing anything to support everybody else. And that's what Jesus told us to do. And remember, we are students of Jesus. He told us, bear each other's burdens, help each other, love one another. So, closing. You were just waiting. When's he going to close? I really want you to consider, in on top of whatever you give here, consider giving to DSF. What DSF, Diocesan Services Fund, you sign up for it. And you choose what you're going to give. That's between you and God. Okay? But we need some of you to say, okay, I'm going to give a little bit each month to the DSF. Because we need to continue reaching out. We can't just be parochial. Folks, Jesus only taught one prayer. And you'd think that the guy would have taught tons of prayers. He taught one. And that one prayer does not begin with the word my. It begins with the word our. We're brothers and sisters. And if we're really intentional disciples, and we're heading towards that, we have to take care of each other. And that's what DSF does. So I'm asking you, if you've not signed up to make a yearly pledge, you don't do it all in one, just make a little bit each month, please do so. It's part of our responsibility. Every other parish in this archdiocese is doing that. And we have to do it. And why? Because we're Catholic. You'll find some of the envelopes, I think, on your pews. I really ask you to sign up to give something every month. Thank you.